The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
There goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to Dave's Gone By, an hour of talk radio, music, and comedy brought to you every week by Total Theater on one of the oldest radio stations in the country, AM 1240 WGBB Freeport, and live audio streaming on davesgoneby.com. I hope you got to listen to the station last Sunday. I was subbing for Joe Salzone on his show, Your World, which also airs at 7 p.m. Joe is on vacation, having a terrific time, apparently, in a tiny, tiny town in southern Illinois. It's got that real Mayberry quality, which seems to appeal to Joe, who grew up in a similar type of neighborhood in Texas. The town actually has a general store, not a Walmart, not a Home Depot, a general store. And last I heard, Joe bought like 5 generals. So he's really, no, but as someone with 2 jobs and a chronic illness that he's learning to cope with, Joe is greatly appreciating the slow pace and the old-fashioned quiet. And I enjoyed filling in for his show, which I tried to keep in the same format, political talk and interviews. And I will be guest hosting Joe's show again this Sunday, July 18th. Should be a real kick because I'll have 2 major guests. The president and CEO of New York City and Company, they're the official PR people for the city of New York, though not Puerto Ricans, I mean the folks who do marketing and publicity for the Big Apple. These are the people who campaign for the Olympics, the Grammys, they organize Restaurant Week, Operation Sale, the Broadway on Broadway concert, and, most germanely, not sure if that is a word, most germanishly, most Germanically? Most relevantly, they're dealing with the organizational aspects of the Republican convention. So, they're nonpartisan, they're not for profit, but they've got a job to do. And all things considered, it's quite a task. So I will be talking to Christine Nicholson from New York City and Company and their website, nycvisit.com. You should really check that out. You know, Restaurant Week actually goes throughout Labor Day. So for a lot of eateries, they're all listed on the site, nycvisit.com. And on the other side of the convention situation is a performance artist who started a few years ago with an anti-shopping, anti-evil capitalism agenda and rant, which he still has. But that's been expanded into a pro-constitution and pro-free speech platform, which he uses in the character of Reverend Beanie. You've probably seen him on TV, proselytizing in Disney stores and Starbucks, organizing small media stunts and events. He's really picking up where the Living Theater and the agitprop street theater folks of the 60s left off. And Reverend Billy has his own ideas about how to react to the Republican convention in August. So it should be a wild and interesting interview and contrast nicely with the one from NYC Visit. That's all happening Sunday, 7 o'clock, on Your World with me. But I hear yourself asking, hey Dave, all this talk about the show you're gonna do 3 days from now, what about tonight's show? Don't you have anything special for this episode? And my answer is, yes, indeed I do. Including a bunch of the classic standard features you've come to expect on every fine model of this program that rolls off the assembly line of my demented head. For example, we've got Dave Goes Off, a segment where I discuss issues that are on my mind and try to sort them out and maybe goof on them a little too. And then there's the all-goof, all-the-time News Gone By, a look at current and world events, weekend update meets Daily Show style. Making brief appearances in tonight's News Gone By are the likes of Ronald McDonald, Courtney Love, and let's face it, when she does her own makeup, there's a scary resemblance between those two. Mexican chicks, Chinese writing, and Italian commerce, plus the bad pun of the week, which is really bad. I'm so proud of it. Also tonight, Inside Broadway, our new segment, sponsored by Total Theater and Performing Arts Insider, will give you the scoop on what's happening on and off Broadway now that the actors' strike has been averted. All that, plus we'll be playing some music by Tom Lehrer and a Woodman birthday tribute to Ian Curtis, tormented lead singer of the band Joy Division. A crowded and varied show tonight indeed, July 15th on Days Gone By, our 85th episode. We've been doing them since October of 2002, and darn near every single one is a mix of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music hosted by yours truly, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, journalist, humorist, and protector of the innocent. So, if you have a family member not quite ready for the occasional grown-up theme or low-down joke, do be reminded that we rate this program DGB-13, not DGB-G, but not DGB-X either. Why, I bet we'd even pass muster on Clear Channel. And we will be passing muster on Clear Channel in our first segment, Dave Goes Off, which gets underway just 30 seconds from now. Italian, Italian, Chinese, pizza, diner, Italian. You'd figure Long Island would have a wider selection. At least there's a really good Indian place, the Tandoor Grill, 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center. Entrees of chicken, fish, lamb, vegetarian, and if you mention Dave's Gone By, you get 10% off the bill. Open daily for lunch and dinner, the Tandoor Grill, 516-766-4440. Something different, something good. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Time for a segment called Dave Goes Off. Off on a topic, off on a rant, off on a sidebar of something that interests me or I feel I want to talk about. Tonight, a couple of topics involving media, which I'd like to weigh in on. Because, of course, my opinion is the one that you should all agree with. You know, there's an old saying that goes, opinions are like anuses. Everybody has one, so who cares about yours? But I like to think that one of the goals of talk radio, one of the reasons people tune in, be it to a Sean Hannity or a Howard Stern or a Lionel or a Dr. Joy Brown, is to hear opinions expressed in a way that either gets a laugh or gets your blood riled up or confirms your own opinions in a way that makes you feel all's right with the world. Ah, you say, I'm not alone. So-and-so feels this way, too. And so do most of his callers. And all those people who feel differently are idiots, although one or two of them did make a little sense here and there. Anyway, that's all preface to say that this program, Dave's Gone By, is a forum for opinion, mostly my opinion, and if you don't like my 2 cents, then drop me a letter or an email and put in 4 cents of your own. So first up in tonight's Dave Goes Off, we begin with advertising. I mentioned on the News Gone By coming up how Italy is having all this controversy about billboards and scaffolds ruining the vistas of its landmarks. But New York now has an advertising controversy all its own. It has to do with an ad a group called Project Billboard wants to hoist in the heart of Times Square, starting August 2nd. According to the Associated Press, it's a 69-foot by 44-foot billboard with a drawing of a lit bomb on it, one of those old-fashioned cartoon-type bombs you see in the Wile E. Coyote cartoons, only the bomb doesn't have the word Acme on it. Instead, it's got white stars on a field of blue with red and white stripes below it, the flag design. And under the image, the words, "Democracy is best taught by example, not by war." So it's a big old anti-war message poised to hit Times Square just when the Republican convention comes to town. Nice idea, great timing. Big problem, because the sign would be displayed on the Marriott Marquis Hotel on Broadway. Now, the advertising space is currently being leased by Clear Channel Spectacolor. Clear Channel agreed to sublease the space to Project Billboard before they knew what the ad would be. As soon as they saw the anti-war message, Clear Channel revoked the permission. They told the federal judge that they were concerned not about the pacifist message, nor the inherent anti-Bush sentiment, but about the giant image of a bomb looming over Midtown Manhattan. After all, said one attorney, quote, "Those of us who have been in New York for a while understand the sensitivities many New Yorkers have to bombs," unquote. And for their part, Project Billboard says it paid for the space. The ad is not offensive or indecent or obscene, and any efforts to block its appearance constitute censorship. which is why they're suing Clear Channel for the cost of the ad. What's interesting is that not only is the issue at hand not completely cut and dry, but the wrangling has all these subtle twists to it. For example, Reuters reports that when Clear Channel first balked at the ad, Project Billboard offered to replace the bomb image with a dove, and Clear Channel still rejected it. But the multi-mega media chain has a big loophole here in their defense. They pointed out that the hotel itself, the Marriott Marquis, must approve of the billboard, and the Marquis has, quote, an explicit opposition to political advertising of any kind. Or, as a Marriott spokesperson put it, quote, we do not place ads with political content on the billboard, unquote. At which point, Clear Channel, in good faith and, well, desperate not to look like censors, said they would be glad to find another big splashy billboard in Midtown to substitute for the Marquee, which apparently Project Billboard would be okay with. So we'll probably see this resolved by the time you're listening to this. But the lawsuit continues nonetheless. Clear Channel's lawyers are arguing that an explosive device is just the wrong image to use for an anti-war ad in post-9/11 New York, while the Berkeley-based Project Billboard says changing the bomb to a dove would be a less provocative and therefore less effective image. Let's face it, would a peaceful bird have gotten this much free media coverage and publicity even before the signs up? So, inadvertently, Clear Channel and the Marquee may have helped spread the pro-peace message, but that doesn't give them a free pass on all this. So, where am I on all this? But having seen the ad, at least in small size on TV and on the internet, I agree that it is a striking, eye-stopping image, whereas a dove, while perhaps a lot nicer, would be more like something you'd see on a t-shirt or a postage stamp. At the same time, I do concede that there's a slight bad aftertaste in using a bomb image just 3 miles from Ground Zero. I realize the intent is to prevent another Ground Zero, here and halfway across the world, but New Yorkers are nervous enough as it is, especially with the convention coming to town and the area being turned into a police state in a couple of weeks. Is it really what residents and tourists and motorists want to see when they stand at the TKTS booth or go searching for Restaurant Row? Now, the folks who designed the ad are all from the Bay Area in San Francisco, and with all due respect to their occasional earthquakes, they didn't live through 9/11 the way thousands of New Yorkers did. I'm not sure it's California's place to remind New York of the cost of war, especially since they've got a Republican governor who seems to get along just fine with the man in the White House. So I guess I'm saying that I wish Project Billboard had come up with another billboard to begin with, or they'd scrapped the bomb idea for an equally potent one with less directly unpleasant associations to New Yorkers. And they wouldn't have done it out of self-censorship, merely out of humanistic judgment. But they didn't. They made a powerful choice, stuck by their guns, sort of, and went with their gut. And as I said before, it's not as if they used the F word, or made a racial slur, or even yelled fire in a crowded intersection. Even by the FCC's admittedly tenuous and easy to misinterpret rules, Project Billboard is in the clear. As such, they should be allowed to post their bills whenever and wherever they're legally contracted to do so. I almost wish the Marquee didn't have that rule about no political advertising, because then the two sides would really have to fight it out, the ultra-liberal Project Billboard on the left and the right-wing conservative Christian Clear Channel on the right, who, by the way, give a lot of money to Republican causes and tend to push for right-wing viewpoints. And in case you've never heard of Clear Channel, you might want to know that they own roughly 1,200 radio stations, 39 TV stations, and 750,000 outdoor billboards around the country. Now, the Marriott taking the onus off Clear Channel in this case unfortunately dilutes the issue, but it doesn't drown the problem out completely. I'd like to see where they end up putting that billboard and any advertisement the conservatives might want to post as a rebuttal. It all does come down to the First Amendment. Free speech is free speech, and that other pillar of American society, money. If you pay your fee, you get to speak your mind. What Here's a shining example of that right now.
Sir, what are you doing?
Nothing.
Are you photocopying your butt?
Yeah, isn't it cool? I want to send lots of copies.
Not in a public library.
I know, it's so expensive here, 25 cents a cheek.
No, I mean, why not go to Hewlett Minuteman Press?
Hewlett Minuteman Press?
1315 Broadway in Hewlett. They can make copies, they can laminate it, print it in a booklet, put it on a mug.
My ass on a mug. Wow.
Call 516-569-5577. 516-569-5577. And hey, stop it! You can't copy that!
But what do I put on the other side of the mug?
Returning to Dave's Gone By and the segment Dave Goes Off, wherein I bloviate, opinionate, and fulminate on a host of things, and I also sometimes take stock in a more gentle vein, remembering, reminiscing, and reflecting. Tonight, it's within the context of an obit for Jeff Smith, better known as the Frugal Gourmet. His TV show started in Tacoma, Washington, back in 1973, and by the late 1980s was syndicated to public television stations all over the country. Smith was doing fine until 1997, when seven different men hit him with a class-action lawsuit. They accused the Frugal Gourmet, a husband and father of two, of sexually abusing them. Smith settled out of court, but that was the end of his TV career. In later years, Smith's heart disease led to some physical debilitation, but he still cooked for friends and charities. When he died a week ago Wednesday, it was technically from natural causes, although he was only 65 years old. Quotes from acquaintances and colleagues on Smith run the gamut, with some branding him a mediocre cook and a tyrant on the set. Others say he was genial and generous and genuine. What struck me about the Frugal Gourmet is just the impermanence, the fleeting nature of television. It's always kind of unsettled me. I mean, last week when Marlon Brando died, everybody felt something. It was a big deal. Brando had been making maybe one movie every 4 years, but he remained in the public consciousness, even if it was as the butt of a joke or a way to say, remember what he used to be? And, oh, look at him now. And authors and musicians don't really go away, because if you have their albums, all you gotta do is look on your shelf, and there they are. But here's the Frugal Gourmet, a guy who was on television every week on, like, three different public TV stations carried by cable in our area. And I must have seen 20, 30 episodes, at least partially, over the course of a few years. And they were enjoyable. He was a very engaging presence, and it was entertaining to watch him in the kitchen. So how come, between, say, 1998 and 2004, I never thought of him once? Not one anecdote, not one jog of the memory, not one moment where I went, hey, remember the Frugal Gourmet? It was a pretty good cooking show. I didn't even think of him when some other celebrity got into a sex-rated stew, like Michael Jackson or Peter Townsend or Jeffrey Jones or whoever. The scariest part is, I probably could have gone to my grave, hopefully 50 or 60 years from now, without ever for a second remembering Jeff Smith or the Frugal Gourmet again. I call it newscaster syndrome. You see some anchor person or reporter on the TV news, and every day they become part of your life in some small way. And if they've been on the broadcast long enough, they get a big send-off when they retire, and all the other people on the show do little tributes and say goodbye. But the following week, it's like they were never, ever there. Now, granted, there's always the possibility that you might be talking to someone and they're like, hey, remember Roger Grimsby? Here now, the news. McGee Hickey, Chi-Chi Williams. Remember John Bartholomew Tucker, Melba Tolliver, Roseanne Scamardella. Well, you might remember the last one because Gilda Radner morphed her into Roseanne Rosanadana on Saturday Night Live. Hey, how many SNL alumni from recent years have gone off the radar? Melanie Hutsell? Tony Rosato? Pamela Stevenson? Gary Kroger? He was on for 3 seasons. Who the hell was he? The names sometimes ring a bell, even if the faces don't, but if I hadn't done a Google search on old New York newscasters and Saturday Night Live alumni, I wouldn't have remembered most of the folks I just mentioned. Now, of course, with the relentlessness of radio, television, newspapers, internet, media. So much comes at us over the course of just a year, let alone a lifetime, that as soon as something ends, we have to mentally push it away to make room for more stuff. I guess that's the nature of things. But it does make you wonder what your legacy is going to be, if any. I mean, if I'm not going to remember some guy who was on TV for years, someone I used to watch, and someone already working in the era of mass media and reruns and tie-ins and books and syndication, if I can't remember him, well, hope is there for me. And I don't mean that in a hubristic way, comparing myself to him. But here's my show, on every week for more than a year and a half. And I know a lot of folks are listening, and I get emails and calls and recognition from people who've seen me interviewed on TV, and we've been selling copies of Days Gone By on CD. So there's a level of posterity there. But I wonder, at some point when the show is no more, and I'm not even talking about when I'm no more, I could still be alive, but with all this effort, all this thought and time I put into making this radio program different and worthwhile, does it all vanish without a second thought? Does it just go away? And the thousands of people who've heard at least a show or two, or even listened regularly, will they file it away in a back area of their cerebrums, never to be heard from again? How sad. I wish there was a way, maybe once every 10 years, that everyone who's even remotely come across this show could get some kind of reminder. Maybe an email, if that still exists, a letter, a note found in a mailbox, just something that says, Days Gone By, or a whole list of things, a shopping list of names and events and programs and experiences, so that people could take a couple of minutes and go, wow, I haven't thought of that stuff in 10 years. Whatever happened to, I remember that. Oh, I remember that. I vaguely remember that, but I certainly remember that. Kind of like when Alzheimer's patients put up little stickies all over the kitchen to remind them of what to do. Maybe we all need little stickies to remind us of what we've done. Well, it's getting a little sticky in here, so enough of these maudlin thoughts. If you want to share your opinion about Clear Channel, or the Frugal Gourmet, or the Clear Gourmet, or the Frugal Channel, or life and death and advertising and memory and everything in between, write to me, davesgoneby@aol.com, davesgoneby@aol.com. Let me know if I can share your thoughts on the air as you go off on Dave Goes Off, and more of Dave's Gone By coming at you, whether you'll remember it or not, right after this. Are bright on Broadway, and you can see them shine off Broadway too. And if you love the theater scene, you need this special magazine. Performing Arts Insider is for you. Everything you want to know about theater, cabaret, opera, and dance, 516-295-1511, or go to TotalTheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater and Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. And everything is up and running this week, on Broadway and off. Producers and the Actors Union averted a strike, and they settled their differences over salaries, actor safety, health care, and the big sticking point, non-union tours. The new contract is good for another 4 years, so smiles all around for theater creators, theater backers, and theater goers. Otherwise, it's a relatively quiet week on Broadway. There's one new show, actually a return, Luis Bravo's Forever Tango. It's a night of authentic Argentinian dance, complete with an 11-piece orchestra. The show played Broadway for a year back in 1997 and comes to the Schubert Theater for a limited run starting this Tuesday. And speaking of the Schubert, it was announced last week that the old Shub will be the future home of Spamalot. That's right, Monty Python's Spamalot, a theatrical adaptation of their legendary comedy, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Eric Idle is adapting the book. He's the only Python involved in the project, but he and John Duprez are adding a bunch of songs, and they got Mike Nichols to direct. Tim Curry, the original Rocky Horror, is going to play King Arthur. The bold and brave Sir Robin will be David Hyde Pierce of Frasier fame, and playing Lancelot will be Hank Azaria. I'm a little surprised at that. I thought they'd cast him as the angry Frenchman, since he's such a master at voices. Azaria's roles on The Simpsons include Chief Wiggum, Apu, Professor Frink, Bumblebee Man, and Duff Man. Oh yeah! And you know what's better than an ice-cold Duff? Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. Everything you need to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret and dance, rumors and reviews. Comprehensive listings and fun stuff to read, it's Performing Arts Insider. Available by subscription, 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511, or visit TotalTheater.com. That's the website, TotalTheater.com. Just a few reminders off-Broadway. Starting previews on Wednesday at Playwrights Horizons is a new work by Horton Foote. That's right. The indefatigable octogenarian, who has written more than 50 plays, many of them about the same extended family in a small Texas town. His latest is The Day Emily Married, about a young couple, played by James Colby, and the playwright's own daughter, actress Hallie Foote. These newlyweds move in with her parents, and you can probably guess just how much fun that is for them, especially since Mom and Dad are played by William Biff McGuire and Estelle Parsons, who played Roseanne's mom on TV. Horton Foote, whose greatest legacy remains writing the screenplay for To Kill a Mockingbird, tends to write about quiet revelations of joy and despair, small moments writ large. And expect the same at a different theater, The Mint, which on Sunday opens two old one-act plays by J.M. Barrie, the fellow who wrote Peter Pan. The evening is titled Echoes of the War, and features Richard Easton and Francis Sternhagen. And opening tonight, July 15th, on 15th Street, is a biographical musical on the life of beloved Yiddish actress Molly Pecan. It stars Barbara Minkus, and it's called Pecan Pie, so I guess it's a slice of her life. And we will be serving up more delicious theater news next week on Total Theater's Inside Broadway.
Did you know Dave Lefkowitz of Dave's Gone By is not just a radio personality? He's also a playwright, and his book, Marriage Babies and the End of the World, is filled with the same humor he brings to his show every week. Funny, sad, and true. At only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback, Marriage Babies and the End of the World makes a great gift. So get your copy today. Call 516-295-1511. That's 516-295-1511. Or email davesgoneby@aol.com.
On the radio, ooh, ooh, on the radio, ooh.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Nothing. I'm just so jazzed about the show's WGBB plays on the weekends. There's more to the station than Dave's Gone By.
What, like a single show with Bonnie D. Graham?
Right. Long Island's Dating, Friday nights at 6 o'clock. Interviews, advice, it's fun.
I don't know, I'd rather hear music.
Well, then you should tune in to the Mr. Redman Music Show.
Mr. Who?
Mr. Redman. He plays all these unsigned Long Island rock bands every Saturday night from 7:30 to 9.
Mm.
He even has a top 10 countdown.
Is he funny?
Well, he tries to be.
Because the guys after him, Mikey and Jimmy, they're pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, they do a comedy team zoo kind of thing. The Mikey and Jimmy Show, 9 to 10 on Saturdays.
What about Sunday nights? Anything good on then?
Like, duh, Joe Salzone, 7 o'clock.
Ah, he's that political conservative guy. What is he, like, 20?
Yeah, still young enough to have an open mind and a sense of humor.
Mm.
So you see, four different shows for you to listen to on the weekend. Long Island's Dating, Fridays at 6.
Mr. Redman, Saturdays at 7:30, followed by Mikey and Jimmy at 9.
And Joe Salzone, 7 p.m. on Sundays.
Well, that's a lot of good shows.
Sing it with me now.
On the radio. Ooh, on the radio. Ooh, on the radio.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Thursday, July 15th, 2004. Time for the news gone by. A look at events of the past week from a billboard perspective. We begin with news from Washington and a scathing report by the Senate Intelligence Committee. They've determined lawmakers were misled into voting for the Iraqi invasion by a deliberate falsehood. Asked how he felt about that, one senator said, "It's awful, but hey, the Supreme Court told us Bush won the election, and we believed it." In entertainment news, hours after a warrant was issued for her arrest for missing a court date in California, Courtney Love was rushed by ambulance to New York's Bellevue Hospital. Drugs were not involved, according to Love's lawyer. In fact, he said the singer suffered a gynecological problem. Honest to God, EMS workers said Courtney was bleeding from the vagina and having a miscarriage. But the truth, apparently, is that Love had already given birth to a new baby, but when the infant saw who his mother was, instead of putting his mouth on her breast, he placed it over Kurt Cobain's shotgun and fired. Nasty story from Bonnie Lake, Washington. Three children were killed and their mom critically injured when her boyfriend set them all on fire. He held them in a car at gunpoint and doused the whole thing with gasoline, himself included. It's the usual story, abusive relationship, the woman breaking up and reconciling and breaking up again with this jerk, who also died in the blaze. The sad irony is that the mom always tried hard to keep her kids away from cigarettes and crack, and yet now the three kids can't stop smoking. On the food front, diners at a McDonald's in Oslo, Norway, got a surprise visit from Ronald McDonald himself. Or so it seemed, until the man, dressed in full clown gear, launched into a tirade against the restaurant chain and wouldn't leave until police led him away in handcuffs. Turned out, he wasn't Ronald McDonald at all, but a performance artist making a political demonstration against the organization. Said one witness, quote, "It was supposedly some sort of art." "That's art. I'm a truck." He was screaming and yelling. "It was very unpleasant," unquote. The witness did add that there was a plus side. It took his mind off the food. Our headline of the week comes from Reuters, and I'm reading this verbatim. Quote, "Man jailed for shooting off his testicles." And yes, I will read that one more time. "Man jailed for shooting off his testicles." This is going to be worse than shooting off your mouth, I'll tell you. A British man had drunk 15 pints of beer at a local pub and got into an argument with his friend there. The bloke went home to get his sawed-off shotgun, which he jammed into his pants. I'm going to quote Reuters again. "As the man walked back to the pub, the gun went off, blasting pellets into his testicles. Doctors later removed what remained during emergency surgery, and if that weren't bad enough, the guy was then sentenced to 5 years in the slammer for carrying an illegal firearm. Asked if he hadn't already suffered enough for his crime, and jail was just adding insult to injury, the man said, "I don't care. I really don't care." In equally bizarre surgical news, Rafael Macedo, the Attorney General of Mexico, has had a microchip inserted under the skin of his arm. The chip will allow him to easily be traced if he's ever kidnapped. It also gives him exclusive access to a computerized crime database. In fact, several members of his staff have had the same chip implant. It all sounds 1984-ish, but Mexico is suffering from a huge wave of murder and violent crime, and there have been 15,000 kidnappings in the last 10 years. In fact, it's gotten so bad, there are currently more people missing than actually there. People have started abducting themselves just to be part of the trend. The only good news is a concurrent real estate boom with hostage space at a premium. Kidnappers are willing to pay exorbitant rates just to have a place to hold a captive for a month or two. Howard Johnson's is already building a hotel specifically geared towards kidnappers and their needs, including tinted windows, a Molotov cocktail minibar, and a copy of the Anarchist's cookbook in every drawer. Meanwhile, the more upscale Radisson El Abducto offers a barbershop specializing in disguises, extra absorbent towels for blood-related spills, and a fresh ammo belt left on the pillow every morning. Their motto? Radisson, the place to get away before your getaway. And now, sport. After 2 days with no injuries, four people, two of them Americans, were hurt last week in the annual Running of the Bulls in Pamplona, Spain. One Yankee was gored in the knee, the other gored in the groin, which a government spokesman called, quote, a slight injury.
Forgive me, but I don't think there's anything slight about having your scrotum pierced by an antler. But it's true, the Americans were better off than Spaniard Juan Valbona Serra, who was struck by a bull.
The bull then fell on him. When he finally struggled free, two other bulls hit him in the back and the side and then lifted him in the air. He suffered a 6-inch gore to his thigh and was hospitalized. Asked if the running of the bulls and bullfighting was a cruel sport, unfair to poor, dumb, defenseless creatures, the Spanish foreign minister said, sure, but they're all out of school with nothing else to do.
When it's fiesta time in Guadalajara, then I long to be back once again in old Mexico, where we lived for today, never giving a thought to tomorrow. To the strumming of guitars in 100 grubby bars, I would whisper, te amo. The mariachis would serenade, and they would not shut up till they were paid. We ate, we drank, and we were merry, and we got typhoid and dysentery. Oh, but best of all, we went to the Plaza de Toros. Now whenever I start feeling morose, I revive by recalling that scene. And names like Belmonte, Dominguín, and Manolete, if I live to 180, I shall never forget what they mean. There is surely nothing more beautiful in this world than the sight of a lone man facing single-handedly a half a ton of angry pot roast. Out came the matador, who must have been potted or slightly insane, but who looked rather bored. Then the picadors, of course, each one on his horse. I shouted, hooray, every time one was gored. I cheered at the banderilleros display as they stuck the bull in their own clever way, for I hadn't had so much fun since the day my brother's dog, Rover, got run over. Rover was killed by a Pontiac, and it was done with such grace and artistry that the witnesses awarded the driver both ears and the tail. But I digress. The moment had come, I swallowed my gum. We knew there'd be blood on the sand pretty soon. The crowd held its breath, hoping that death would brighten an otherwise dull afternoon. At last, the matador did what we wanted him to. He raised his sword and his aim was true. In that moment of truth, I suddenly knew that someone had stolen my wallet. Now it's fiesta time in Akron, Ohio. But it's back to old Guadalajara I'm longing to go. Far away from the strikes of the AFL and the CIO. How I wish I could get back to the land of the wetback and forget the Alamo. In old Mexico.
The strangest part of the whole running of the bulls tradition in Pamplona is that it's dedicated to Saint Fermin, the first bishop of the Navarra district. He did okay while he stayed mainly in Spain, but he was beheaded by the French for spreading Catholicism there. And yet, it was the guy who baptized him who seemed the most relevant to Pamplona, Saint Saturninus, the bishop of Toulouse, who was martyred in 257 AD by having his feet tied to a bull and then being dragged to his death. When the animal finally came to a stop, officials untied Saturninus, who was now very dead, but oddly enough, he wasn't covered with blood. Instead, they noticed a slick, greasy substance all over his body. Asked what that could be, officials said, "Well, considering his method of death, it could only be one thing. Oil of olay."
"Yes, yes, me gusta mucho, sí. Es el tiempo para el comedy bell. La campana del comedia.
The bell that starts the running of the Dave's Gone By Bad Pun of the Week. Every week on the News Gone By, we try to make a play on words so bullheaded, so adorable, that listeners are simply cowed into submission, because that bad pun is the perfect way for you to advertise on Dave's Gone By. People get a laugh, a chuckle, they look forward to it, kind of like Pavlov's experiment. You ring the bell, and the people start drooling, especially my listeners. So why not make them salivate for your restaurant? Make them hungry for the bargains at your home decorating store, clothing shop, or antique dealership. Make listeners' tummies growl for whatever it is you want them to digest. Dave's Gone By is the place to advertise your product, event, or service. It has worked for the Tondra Grill, for Hewlett Minuteman Press, for Performing Arts Insider, and it can work for you. Because advertising operates on three principles: repetition, humor, and repetition. And when people tune into my show to hear what I have to say, you can be a part of what I'm saying. You can take out a 30 or 60 second ad, or sponsor a whole segment like Dave Goes Off or the World Weird Web. The rates are inexpensive and the results will surprise you. You want to see the rate card? Go to davesgoneby.com. They're posted right there. Or call 516-295-1511 for all the information. 516-295-1511. Don't miss this opportunity to spread your message through the neighborhood. 516-295-1511, or you can email davesgoneby@aol.com for all the answers about advertising on this show. Be a part of Dave's Gone By, including our beloved Bad Pun of the Week. Don't be good, be ponderful. Returning to the News Gone By, sad news from television land. Isabel Sanford, best known for playing Louise Weezy Jefferson, passed away last Friday, July 9th, of natural causes. She started her career in theater, of course, which led to a featured part in the 1967 movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And then she shuttled between small roles in films and one-shots on TV. And then, for 4 years, she was the next-door neighbor of Archie and Edith Bunker on All in the Family, before she spun off with a different and slightly less angry husband to the upscale high life of the Jeffersons. She stayed there, playing opposite the incomparable Sherman Hemsley on the Jeffersons, earning her an Emmy Award and a happy place in sitcom history. And Sanford was still doing commercials just a few months ago for Old Navy and Denny's Restaurant. And let's face it, could Denny's have picked a better spokesperson to change their image with black customers than Weezy? So farewell to Isabel Sanford, who moved on up to a deluxe penthouse in the sky. Her example certainly helped other black performers and black actresses finally get their piece of the pie. In the More Things Change news, archaeologists studying a section of the Great Wall of China have discovered special carvings on its watchtowers. Turns out, it's graffiti. Soldiers sent there in the 16th century to guard the walls were allowed to bring their wives and kids. So, families would decorate the rocks with special messages, most of them representing love and peace. A lot of them are haikus, or just ornamental drawings, But there were a few that were strikingly modern, including Wu Shi Choi is a Slut, F the Police, Curloy was here, and For a Good Time, Call Xin Li, Ba Ba Ba, Ba Ba Yi Yi. There's also an artistic drawing of a blue dog, but that turned out to be the menu for a local Vietnamese restaurant. Hey, speaking of the desecration of ancient things, how about that piece in the Chicago Tribune about the great historical sites of Italy? They're all being blocked by advertising. I quote, "A lovely 16th century church sits at the top of the Spanish Steps, but if you're visiting Rome this summer, you won't be able to see it. That's because it's been draped in a giant advertisement for L'Oreal Beauty Products, the latest in a series of controversial ads that obscure the ancient city's monuments. There's also a big bottle of shampoo covering up one end of the 15th century Campo di Fiori, and there's a Vespa scooter zooming across a facade behind the Piazza Navona, and the Piazza di Spagna is dominated by a banner promoting coffee," unquote. Even the Pantheon, the famous old pagan temple, even the Pantheon is getting the Madison Avenue treatment. Why? Money, of course. Many of these buildings require huge sums for upkeep and restoration, and advertisers are happy to pay it. But of course, the minute there's real profit involved, taste and ethics go out the window. Some buildings have had scaffolding up for years, much longer than needed, just to keep the ad dollars coming in. Other buildings that didn't even need much work are getting it anyway. For example, an obelisk erected by Mussolini in 1938 is now covered up by a scantily clad woman promoting an internet service. However phallically appropriate this gesture, the obelisk isn't that old and didn't need restoring in the first place. The worst example was a lipstick ad with a huge pair of red lips smacked across the facade of a 15th century Trinita de Monti church. Cardinals objected, enraged that they had to constantly stare at the eroticized lips of an adult female rather than a 10-year-old altar boy. No, but seriously, officials are trying to make sure that the Pantheon project won't be offensive. This is a quote from Vanna Manucci, vice president of the agency that hooks up advertisers with potential buildings. Manucci said, quote, "Rich monuments must be made to pay for the poorer ones. I'm sorry for tourists who turn up and find that they can't see a monument, only an advert. But for the next 20 years or more, everyone else will see it, so someone has to compromise. Still, we will not allow any advertisements for underwear out of respect for the building," unquote. I don't know, that makes no sense to me. Bras and girdles and jocks and pantyhose, they would go perfect on old buildings. After all, they are foundation garments. And that's the news gone by for July 15th, 2004. Please send your comments, opinions, and Mussolini obelisks to Days Gone By, P.O. Box 62, QNET, New York, 11557-0062. If you don't have a pencil, the address is on the website, of course, davesgoneby.com. And that is also the place to find out more about advertising or buying CDs, as well as discovering all sorts of info about the show. But your feedback is the only way I know you're listening, laughing, enjoying the program, agreeing, disagreeing, or in another room peeing. So write to me, Dave's Gone By, Box 62, QNET, New York, 11557-0062. You can also email me at davesgoneby@aol.com. We reserve the right to read your letters on the air, name withheld upon request. Send letters and gifts and packages, but please, no Chinese graffiti. An hour later, you just want to read it again. Back after this.
Do you know how easy and inexpensive it is to advertise on Dave's Gone By? You don't? Well, hey, it's even easier to find out. You can run a 30 or 60 second ad or sponsor one of the segments on this show or the whole show. Just go to our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, to see the rate sheet or call 516-295-1511. Bring your message to my audience. Advertise on Dave's Gone By.
Oh my God, this is terrible.
What?
There are 168 hours in a week,
But Dave's Gone By is only on 1 hour long.
I know, I'm just on Thursday nights.
But that's not enough.
Why don't you get my CDs?
CDs?
All my complete shows are on compact disc. $14 a piece, or less if you buy a bunch. Just go to davesgoneby.com. Fully packaged, and they make a nice gift, too.
Well, my depression has cleared.
Great.
But not my psychosis. What chicken is this?
Classics of modernist pop, Love Will Tear Us Apart, by the band Joy Division. The lead singer with that flattened, trance-like voice was Ian Curtis, a founding member of the group, initially called Warsaw, inspired by a track on David Bowie's Low album. When they realized another band had Warsaw in its name, Curtis, Barney Sumner, Peter Hook, and Terry Mason changed their name to Joy Division. Typical of the group's dark and morbid slant, Joy Division was the official name given to a corps of Jewish women forced to sexually please Nazi officers in concentration camps. Curtis, also the lyricist of the band, was an overly sensitive artsy type whose fatalism and gloom helped make Joy Division a very influential band, but a doomed one. He also suffered from epilepsy, which worsened to the point where he was having fits on stage. Though married, with a kid and a mistress, Curtis became increasingly suicidal, and on May 18, 1980, his wife found him hanging in the kitchen. the three-year legacy of Joy Division, which later morphed into the techno dance band New Order, is hard to appreciate from just the records. The song I just played is by far their most tuneful and accessible, but the group's integration of gothic melancholy, post-punk attitude, and heavy dance beats influenced everything from Nirvana to The Cure. Ian Curtis would have been 48 years old today. He was only 23 when he died, but he proves the old saying, and maybe disproves what I said earlier about legacies, if you write just one song, one poem, one book that captures the moment, people will remember. And I hope you'll remember to tune in to a bunch of other programs on this radio station. Long Island's Dating, Fridays at 6. The Mr. Redman Music Show, Saturday nights, 7:30 to 9. Mikey and Jimmy, comedy, right after Redman. And a brand new show, Tuesday nights at 9, The Instrumental Invasion, smooth and mellow jazz, hosted by Mike Shimeri, a full hour every Tuesday, 9 p.m., on WGBB. And a reminder again to listen this Sunday as I take over your world while Joe Selzone's on vacation. My guests this week, the CEO of New York City and Company and the one and only Reverend Billy. That's at 7 o'clock on Sunday, and then stick around because at 9, barring a last-minute change, this episode of Dave's Gone By will get an encore airing. That's all on Sunday. And of course, we'll be back next Thursday, July 22nd, with another new edition of the show, which, as always, will be brought to you by Total Theater, Performing Arts Insider, the copy and printing Dynamo Hewlett Minuteman Press, and the India-licious Tandoor Grill. So until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Someone take these dreams away. And gone by.